Good morning and welcome back to Nachi Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Divrei Hayomim Beis Perek Yud Zayin, the 17th chapter of the second book of Divrei Hayomim. Our Perek is 19 psukim long and it deals with the topic of the righteousness of Yehoshaphat. There is no parallel parasha to be found in Sefer Melachim because in fact we hear not so much about Yehoshaphat in Sefer Melachim. This is going to complement what we hear in Melachim. So first we hear about Yehoshaphat. He is the son of Asa. And that means to say he's the grandson of Aviah, the great-grandson of Rechavam, the great-great-grandson of Yishlam HaMelech. So Yehoshaphat is told to be a righteous person. Vayischazek al Yisrael, becomes strong over Israel. And he does chayil, it's a word that appears in our parak a few times. He does valor in all the cities of Yehuda. He fortifies them. He places Netzivim, representatives across all of Judea and in the cities of Ephraim. Because remember, Asa had made incursions into the land of Baasha in the north. So he has his people in all of these cities. Everything is under his control. And Hashem was with Yehoshaphat. Why? Because he went in the way of David in his early days, meaning to say, the way of David HaMelech before his sins. That was the way that Yehoshaphat led his administration. He searched out all the mitzvahs. He did not serve the Baal, and was therefore unlike. He was distinct from the northern kingdom. Because of this, Hashem allowed his kingdom to be established. All the cities would pay him homage in Yehud. There was no rebellion in the ranks. There was riches. It was a time of plenty. Vayigbali boy b'darche Hashem. His heart was high, lofty in the service or the ways of Hashem. And he removed the Bamos and the Asherim. So that means to say, not only the Avodah Zarah, but even the Bamot, the serving of Hashem in a personal place, he was able to remove. Which is really an incredible section. This is a very beautiful section to read. So in which way was he strong over Israel? It says the Malbim, when it says in the first pasuk, Vayischazek al Yisrael. So the Malbim says that his father Asa lived in a psychological fear of Baasha. After all, Baasha had made war against Asa. Asa had narrowly escaped by emptying his coffers and bringing Aram into the picture. And so Asa lived with this constant fear of Baasha. And so when Yehoshaphat took the reins, he himself felt much stronger. He felt much more at ease as well. It describes over here that he went in the ways of David, his father, his great, his ancestor, v'lodarash la'ba'alim, and he didn't go seek after the Baal. Mechida points out here a very beautiful Kabbalistic statement from the Arizal that even in a mitzvah, lo'y sa'aseh, a person needs to have kavana, meaning to say, as an example, when a person goes to the barber, the Arizal says, and it doesn't go and just sit and have a haircut, but has to have the intent of not cutting payos for the men, not to have the payos cut, and that is, therefore, one is makayim, one achieves the negative commandment of refraining from something if one has kavana. And that means to say that when Yehoshaphat removed all the Baal, it's not that he just avoided the service because of convenience, because it suited him. He did it specifically with a kavana, with the intent of doing it because of the mitzvah of Hashem. It is interesting to note also Kabbalistically in the Pasuk Vav, where it describes Vayigba li boy b'darche Hashem, the word Vayigba comes to the word lofty, like gavoya, and it's a notion of sort of arrogance, almost haughtiness. So what does it mean that his heart was haughty in the ways of God? So Rav Tzadok HaKon of Lublin quotes in Tzidkas HaTzadik, he quotes the Gemara in Ksubos on Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, which tells us that Yehoshaphat had an unusual practice, that when he saw a Talmud Chacham, any sage, meaning even a pauper who was a Talmud Chacham, he would jump up, run and hug and kiss the person and call that person Rebbe, Moiri, Moiri, my teacher, my master, which is very unusual for a king to treat a sage in such a way. So the Tzidkas HaTzadik, Rav Tzadok HaKohen, explains that the point of this is that his arrogance or his status, his honor, his self-perception was only worn. It was only external. So yes, he was a king to everybody else, but when it came down to it, his value system was such that was only external, and he would really actually value and give honor and dispense of his own honor when it came to the people he believed was at the top of the totem pole, which is really Torah sages. So this really sort of puts in perspective the type of life we should lead. Yes, we lead. We have moments and we have status symbols and we, you know, they're very important things, but those should all fall into place when it comes to the real value system of what continues to make us who we are. And that is interesting because this leads directly into the next section where we hear from Pesukim Zion to Tess about in the third year of his rule, he sets up this education program. So he sends off his officers, their names are Ben Chayil, Ovadia, Zachariah, Nesanel, Michayahu, to teach Torah in all of Israel. And they're accompanied with a group of Leviim, Shemayahu, Nesanyahu, Zavadia, Asael, Shemir Ramos, and Yohanan, Adoniyahu, Tovyahu, Tov Adoniyahu, the Adoniyah, this whole group of people, the Leviim, and also there was Elishama and Yehoram the Kohanim, were sent this delegation. They took a Torah with them, and they went among all the cities of Yehuda to teach Torah. Why the Leviim and the Kohanim? So Rashi points out that that's their job, Yorish Mishpatech Yaakov, that ultimately is their responsibility to do that, to teach Torah, and then the Shotrim would be the enforcers. So they had this army, in a certain sense, this task force sent out to teach Torah, to enforce Torah. It was a very beautiful thing. It changed the landscape of Israel. What Torah were they teaching? So Malbim points out that it was lo mitzvahs sichlios. It wasn't just the logical commandments, the things that make sense to us, honoring parents, not murdering, those not kidnapping, not stealing, but even the ones, the ritual, which are perhaps a little less perceptible for the logical mind, that was all they were teaching. The Chidah says they were teaching the Torah Shebaal Peh, which was accompanied with the Torah Shebichsav. As they took around the Torah scroll, they were teaching the reasons, the logic, because it's very hard sometimes if you only have the Torah Shebichsav to understand what really is going on. That was what was going on here. And finally, we hear in the end of the parak, Pesukim Yud, 2 Yud Tes, where we hear about how Hashem puts the fear of Yehoshaphat's kingdom on all the other kings around them. And there was no wars with Yehoshaphat. Well, we'll see a few later on. But right now, the early era, there was nothing. The Plishtim would bring him homage, and the Araviim, the Arabs, would bring him. The Bedouins would bring him different gifts. And Yehoshaphat was really Godel, Holech, v'Godel Ad Lamala. Very unusual phrase, only appears three times in Tanakh, that he was ascending greatly in his status, and he built the Birionios, the Ariam Yiskanos. He built these Birionios. We'll see in a second what they are, and these storage cities. And he had a great, vast amount of work and an infrastructure which was set up, and then describes who was in charge of the different sections of his army. So we hear about, you know, Adna, who is one of his ministers, and he has 380,000. And then we have Yohanan, who had 280,000. We hear about all these different people who are in charge of different aspects of the army. So what precipitates this section? So Rashi points out that this is really a countercultural idea, and that is that education precipitates military strength. Why is it that Yehoshaphat was so militarily successful? Very simple, because his educational policies were such that he was able to bring Torah to all of Israel. Says Rashi very succinctly, Bizchus Shelamdu Torah. You want to have a successful society, have a spiritual society. You think that maybe I need to invest in the military, in the GDP, investing in the defense, in defense and homeland security. That's all very fine and wonderful. At the core, you need to have Torah. And that's what's being told to us by these two sections juxtaposed to each other. What are the Biranios that he's building? So the Ralbag says they're towers. Could be for a sound of military or strength. The Mitzvah says they were palaces, armonot. And the Malbim suggests they were large storage cities because of the incredible amount of abundance and that was being brought in during these years. What is the relevance of saying that the garrisons were in Jerusalem? If you look at the Pesukim over here, it describes how his soldiers were in Jerusalem. So it says the Malbim, usually when you're at when you're at war or when you're concerned, all your troops are patrolling the borders. The fact that his main garrisons are in Jerusalem is a sign that the borders are at ease. He is at ease, the whole kingdom is at ease. Why do we have this whole section over here at the end with all these soldiers? So the Ralbag says if you do the math, you will see that it is fascinating. If you add up all the troops together of all the different garrisons, you have 1.16 million men in the army. Now contrast that to his father who had 580,000, and contrast that to his grandfather Aviam who had 400,000. We see here almost a doubling of his father's army, right? Almost a tripling of his grandfather's army in size, which shows you, says the Ralbag, that the function of a successful society, which was governed by this Torah moment in history, was what led to this incredible military a success unparalleled in the previous days, and this is really a very hopeful time. We'll see some of the opportunities that Jehoshaphat takes in trying to bridge between the south and the north as we get to the coming chapters. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.